Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special episode of the Talking Comics Podcast. Happy New Year. It's Woo! January 1st, 2020, otherwise known as New Comic Book Day. Noticing the episode number 423, I am your host, Steve Say, and joining me this fine day is Mr. Bob Reier.
I'm Gumby, damn it.
And Joey Ricchino's here.
Happy New Year! Ba, ba, ba,
ba, ba, ba. Hey! Beer, 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 beer. So here's the deal. Sarah is not with us today, and there's a reason for that.
They don't celebrate New Year's over there.
Yeah. No, she ran into a bit of a spot with her internet connection, and unfortunately, she is not going to have access to internet inside of her flat, as she calls it, for a little bit. So here's the deal. We normally would be coming back with our award show. That's traditionally how we do it, but not this year. So surprise, you're going to get about two episodes worth of stuff until we can get to our award show. But we do have some really cool stuff lined up for you in the new year, including a very special guest. We might do a geek trivia episode, and today, this podcast, we're actually going to be talking a lot about Star Wars. We told you guys that we were going to do that, and that's what we're going to do this show. We're going to be talking about Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, The Mandalorian, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order that came out on Xbox and PlayStation and wherever, and a couple of books that we've been reading and stuff. Some of us don't have any notes, so it's going to be very just kind of freewheeling.
It's going to be through fast this stuff. And furious.
Yeah, and we don't have a lot of time because Joey's got to be somewhere in about an hour. So that's the deal, you know. Things happen, and we don't want to do the award show without Sarah. I personally was away from the podcast 1 year. I think I was traveling for work or something, and it sucked. It really sucked.
I tried to fight for you, Steve, but it is
I
hard.
Know, but all I could do was write down my votes on a piece of on a piece of paper, in a document and send it, and I wasn't able to, you know,
fight,
argue for any of my books in the end or anything, and it was terrible. So I don't want Sarah to have to go through that. Nobody does. So, yeah, so we're postponing the awards for about 2 weeks, but we will get to them. And like I said, we have a couple of really cool things lined up after that. So, yeah, that is the deal. We've been away. We've been spending time with families. Christmas has now come and gone. And super quick. I mean, I went out to Ottawa, spent time with my family. Did a lot of reading while I was away. You'll hear about some of the stuff that I read this this podcast. And it was a lovely time. I got some awesome gifts and just generally around good company. And I had fun. Joey, how was your holiday?
It was great. Same thing. Spent time with family. Went to tons of locations. Got some really cool stuff. Listening to this podcast on these new studio headphones. Very excited.
Hey.
Woo, baby. And yeah, like you said, doing a lot of reading, watching a lot of movies. What did I catch this week? Uncut Gems, 1917, which was wild. That was a stressful film. Yeah, I'm starting to like formulate my end of year top 10 right now.
Ooh.
Yeah, I watched one on Amazon Prime that I missed earlier in the year, The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Beautiful film. Absolutely beautiful. No, it was a really cool end of the year. Spending New Year's down the Jersey Shore, as it were. Because hey, it's off season, so everything is open. I mean, everything's really cheap. Nice. So
spending the holidays with the fishes, see?
With the fishes, see? Yeah.
Yeah, we actually, on the way back, it's about a 6.5 hour drive from Ottawa to London. We listened to all three episodes of the awards podcast.
They were fun.
On the way home. They were good. Like, I feel like sometimes when you're in it and you're doing it and, you know, everybody's their own worst critic, I kind of walk away from some podcasts and I'm like, I don't know. Was I stupid? Did I sound like an idiot? They were really good shows. And I think we did a very efficient job of getting through the categories this year. This was the year that it didn't take very long to get to where we needed to get to, and everybody was very much in sync with one another. But anyway, Bob, how was your holiday?
Pretty quiet, as is generally the case. Did get some movies watched. Did get some nice emails from our Talking Comics family, and a lovely holiday card from Kristen Gudsnuck.
Oh,
featuring Penny all over her card, which was
That's awesome.
Nice. Yeah, I did get to see Ready or Not, which I really
yes, Ready or Not.
Yeah, just absolutely love that.
Sweet,
that's on the
really
list.
Really dark comedy, but hits on every note it tries for, with a marvelous ending. It's sort of unexpected, but should have been. It's the ending it had to be, but it works. also caught as a streaming thing, because it doesn't come out till February, Rabbit by the Soska Sisters.
Oh, yeah, they've been talking that up a lot.
It is a wonderful homage in the way that it honors the Cronenberg original, but takes it to a lot of new places, real depth of character, lovely surprises. The effects are amazingly old-fashioned, which really works.
Ooh.
Really, really well done. It is gruesome. I'm not gonna lie, but it's earned gruesomeness. It's part of what has to happen, and so it's not just gratuitous violence. And again, really strong characters and performance. Laura Vandervoort as Rose, really, really nicely done.
I'm looking forward to picking that up in February when it comes out on Blu-ray. Speaking of old school effects and a movie that could have benefited from some old school effects, we watched It Chapter 2 the other night.
Oh.
It's not as strong as the first. There are definitely elements of it that I enjoyed, but oh boy, the CGI in that movie, some stuff that could have very easily been done with prosthetics and practical makeup and practical effects that they decided to go CG with. The old woman in the house.
That wasn't that was a problem with it. My bigger problem is the entire middle 2 hours of that movie.
Middle 2 hours? How long is it?
It's like three hours long.
Oh. Yeah, it's a 3 hour long movie. The flashback sequences with the CGI'd faces on the kids I found to be extraordinarily distracting. And I did not like that. But like I said, there were some of the friendships, the way that they frame them throughout the film, and kind of I really liked the ending of the movie about the last half hour. I thought was really good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I don't think it was a very strong finish, but it's all right.
That movie and Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Both of those just fell apart for me. And then you had movies like Ready or Not, which were doing like fresh, fun takes on, you know, horror movies or like slasher movies. Yeah. And I was like, I'm into this.
I enjoyed the hell out of Scary Stories.
Get out of here.
I really enjoyed it, man. I thought it was real good. I know that's the unpopular opinion, but that's what it is.
It's all right.
Speaking of unpopular opinions, we're on the clock here. We should probably get to some Star Wars.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars.
All right, who wants to go first?
Are we're going into Rise of Skywalker first?
Yeah, let's talk about the Rise of Skywalker. First of all, we'll just call spoilers now if you have not seen Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. We are possibly going to be talking about spoilers, so maybe fast forward into the podcast if you want to, or if you don't care, keep listening, so on and so forth. You know the deal. Joey, let's hear your general thoughts about Star Wars.
So my brother and I caught Star Wars December 18th or whatever the Thursday night show was. We went at like 6 o'clock. We were one of the first showings. The week prior, I had watched all of the Star Wars movies again.
Oh my God.
In release order. I don't do none of that chronological nonsense. I started with episode 4 and I went straight through. Hey, because it's on Disney Plus now. So I was able to just watch them all. So I was really, like, I was following along with the narrative. And my brother did not do that. So watching the film, I think we both came out of that movie being like, general impressions, that was okay. That was fine. It was fun. But it just, you see a lot of the kind of response online being like, that is, it's a very safe movie. It doesn't really take any bold moves. And it walks back some of the things from the previous film. I think I agree with a lot of those sentiments. I'm not as cold on the movie. I didn't hate it, but I didn't particularly find it excellent either. It's a very middling kind of movie for me. Okay and fun. That's about the extent. And part of that, I think, comes from the fact that I was so invested in the overarching story, having watched the entire thing again. Mm-hmm. My brother didn't have that, but he still came out that way. So I just have a feeling that that's kind of just the caliber of the movie. I'll get into all the plot stuff. We don't want to spoil anything just yet. But I do, what I will say is, after this whole new trilogy, the ending trilogy here, I love the cast. I think the cast is really great. Daisy Ridley, Adam Driver, John Boyega, you know, I just, the core, Oscar Isaac, the core group, I think they're so great. And I really love them all in their roles. I think they're really fun. I think there's a lot of great new characters in this third film, this final film as well. Some characters get a little sidelined or, you know, completely ignored, which is a bummer. And there's some twists and turns on our main characters that I think are... don't pay off really, and prove a little problematic, just to the overall narrative. But again, I think it's fine. And I think it's fine in the sense that, you know, Star Wars is fun, but I guess, you know, we're not gonna win an Oscar. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
I will say this too, before passing the torch, watching it again, Phantom Menace is awesome.
What?
Go watch them again. Watch them all again.
No.
Watch them all again. Watch Phantom Menace again. It is a cool, fun movie. Some of the acting in the prequels are whatever, but the ideas, what I loved about the prequels, having watched them all, they're still like not good, well-made films, because George Lucas was like, I'm going to CG everything, especially in episodes 2 and 3. But episode 1 isn't. There's still a lot of practical stuff in episode 1. But also in episode 1, you got Darth Maul. You got some cool Jedi stuff. The prequels do a lot of excellent world building for this whole Star Wars universe that the original trilogy actually doesn't really have. The original trilogy is a very narrow focused kind of thing. But the prequel trilogies do a lot of world building, and the prequel trilogy also took on a new weight for me, as it's really about how a once prosperous republic falls into authoritarian fascist dictatorship. And I was like, man, this is a little prescient. In a way, and it took on new weight there, and I really actually enjoyed watching them again. Attack of the Clones is still one of the worst things of all time, but Phantom Menace I actually really enjoyed and had a lot of fun with, and I really, really, I mentioned this on the Best Of shows, but I respected Last Jedi before, and now I really love Last Jedi. Especially watching it in comparison and in context of all of the movies together. It is a really, really powerful reflection on and reflection of the entire series. And puts out some of these really awesome ideas and premises And unfortunately, I don't think Rise of Skywalker really runs with those threads. And I think that that is really the saddest thing about the new film, is that I think part of what everybody is very critical of the new movie is the direct result of the backlash, the very loud backlash from a small group of people to some of the decisions made in The Last Jedi. And I think it was a bit of a backtracking on Kathleen Kennedy and J.J. Abrams, and it led to a film that unfortunately is garnering almost worse feedback than The Last Jedi did. The Last Jedi just feels like a totally, it's a writer and a director who is like, who knows how to make a movie. And it's Rian Johnson did a really great job with that one. And it moved up my list significantly. There's still some problems with it and pacing and things like that.
Yeah. There's one thing about, we rewatched Force Awakens and Last Jedi before we went to go and see Rise of Skywalker. And this is the only thing I'll say about it. My only problem with Last Jedi, I really like that movie a lot, is that a big part of the plot, especially the stuff with the with Haldo, Laura Dern's character, so much of that hinges on a lack of communication as being the only thing that screwed everything up. Now, and I just...
And here's the thing, that watching the whole thing again and thinking about like what Rian Johnson is commenting on with that movie, Last Jedi, and thinking again about like the prequel films, and I'm like, wow, like where we are in 2019... Last Jedi is like the movie that I didn't know I needed, you know, like watching Poe Dameron be like, well, I'm the captain and I get to do whatever I want and tell me what I need to do. And Laura Dern just being like, dude, like stay in your lane. I was like, oh my God, like I needed this, you know? There's just something about it that, I just really enjoyed, especially in the context of everything else. Which made Rise of Skywalker just all a bit of a, more of a bummer for me. With that said, and I'm sorry I'm talking a lot, but
all right.
I liked it. It's fine. It's middle of the pack for me in terms of all 11 movies. Rogue One is still up there. The original is, I think, still my favorite. A New Hope is still my favorite. But Last Jedi moved up the ranks, and Rise of the Skywalker is kind of in the middle somewhere.
Right. I just feel like if Haldo had like clued Poe Dameron in on the plan,
she doesn't have to,
but she probably should have, because he would have saved a lot of lives.
He should have respected his job. And the reason why all those lives are lost is because Poe Dameron thought he was going to be the big hero and send out confidential information into the freaking sphere.
Right, but if Leia and Haldo had clued him in, it wouldn't happen.
They don't have to. That's not their job. Poe Dameron is presented as this big hero, and he has to realize that he's not.
Taking him down a peg.
You have to take him down a peg. You have to take down those big cockpit fly guys.
Amen.
If they had just respected the mission, nothing bad would have happened.
Bob, what did you think of The Last...
I'll save a lot of time.
The Last Skywalker, The Rise of Skywalker.
I agree with Joey on everything he said, so we can move on. No, seriously, I enjoyed it. It was okay. It's got a lot of problems to me in that where... those threads, as Joey's talking about, they're in The Last Jedi, there's still a lot of things there that bug me. I would have kept Laura Dern's character, Jon Haldo, around and changed all that up and some other things. But... in an attempt to create fan service and to do a retrofit, I guess, of other ideas that they had or not, we lost some interesting threads that could have gone forward. And that's a problem. The movie's overstuffed with things. None of them real ideas. They're things. There are way too many MacGuffin-y things. They're chasing after stuff that turns out they don't really need. Some of the... reveals I found not so wonderful. There's a cheat with the death that would have made Kathy Bates's character from Misery very unhappy. It's a very old-fashioned movie serial cheat on a death. Just enjoys it. This is very safe, but not safe in the way that Force Awakens, where it was revisiting and trying to give us that feeling of, both fun and majesty. And there's some fun here, but there's no... There's nothing that says a movie for the ages in the way that first Star Wars did 42 years ago, whatever it is. So, enjoyed it. It did make me appreciate more the things that they tried to do in Last Jedi, just as it did for Joey. I still don't like that one particularly much either. I think in this run is definitely Force Awakens. Rogue One I liked a lot too, as his own little sort of prequel. But, okay. We'll move on.
All right. All right, let me see. For me, I didn't get to see the movie, so it came out in preview screenings on Thursday. We didn't get the chance to see it until Monday. So you had like 4 days of Star Wars discourse online that I was trying to avoid because I'm shocked that I didn't see almost anything for this movie before going into it. Even at work, I didn't see anything. I just didn't land those articles. But I'm not going to lie. Everybody knows that I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan. I'm a fan of the series. I don't hold it up in a way that I know a lot of other people do. But anyway, I went into that movie, and I'm not going to lie, I had an absolute blast with it. I loved it. I loved the fast pace of it. I loved the visuals of it, some of the new characters, some of the threads and whatever. And I had a blast. And then I went home and the following day started to read about The Rise of Skywalker and the many, many ways in which it goes in the face of Last Jedi and other things. And really started to take a closer look at the new trilogy and was then discovering the holes that it has in it. It is definitely a bit of a mess. You have two directors who were kind of warring for their own story. Rian Johnson trying to prepare everybody to just let the past die and move on from this stuff. And J.J. Abrams is like, yo, man, I'm going to, you know, scrap some of your ideas and pick up the pieces from my Force Awakens, and we're going to do this thing. And then the studio said that we've got to do this and have this character, so we're going to do that too. And it just ends up being kind of a beautiful mess, if you will. But I liked some of the Rey stuff, and I really just liked being in that world and seeing so much of it in this movie, as jam-packed as it was. We got to see a lot of different cool things, some great fights and dogfighting and special effects and everything like that. And that is why I am there, right? Like, I don't know the Star Wars movies enough to pick up on all the little things that, like, oh, this doesn't make any sense, or that can't happen because of this, that, and the other thing. I was very ignorant in that way. So I had a really good time with it. And then I'm going to be very curious to see what happens on a second watch, kind of knowing some of the bullet points that people have pointed out to me since watching that movie for the first time. But regardless, we went with my brother-in-law and his wife. We very rarely get to go out with them. And, you know, we met up at the movies, got tons of snacks, laughed our asses off. And just really had a good time. I spilled my popcorn about 3 times. It was great. And I don't know. As an end to the Skywalker saga, I could see why the movie arrived very divisively for people. And it's Star Wars, so people are going to argue about it no matter what you put out. But it feels very much like there were some high-end people pulling the strings, particularly on the latter end of the movie, that quite possibly was never the intended vision for this saga or even for these characters that are in these new movies. And yes, I was very bothered by characters, especially Rose Tico, being sidelined and relegated to having just 1 minute and 16 seconds worth of screen time. Her sister at the beginning of Last Jedi had more screen time than she did, which was really upsetting. because I liked her character a lot in The Last Jedi and was looking forward to seeing her be more in the mix. And she's back to basically working for the Resistance, doing her mechanic thing in this new movie, and she doesn't get to travel anywhere or really participate or do anything. And for a character that for a lot of people seemed to have arrived as a breath of fresh air and a bit of representation and everything, it was a shame to see that, you know, I don't want to put it entirely on Abrams, but just the powers that be didn't see fit to make her a part of the mix. I felt like that was very disingenuous.
Especially when you pair Finn off with somebody else for...
Yeah.
I love that character, and I love that whole premise of, you know, the resistance. Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but, you know,
you can spoil stuff. We're in spoiler territory. It's fine.
Okay. The kind of stormtroopers who resisted and laid down their arms. I love that. I think that's so
that was good.
The problem with sidelining Rose Tico is there's really no explanation other than the fans didn't really, some people responded very negatively. So let's keep her off the screen. Like, there's no other explanation for why you keep that character sidelined than that. You know, there's no narrative explanation. There's nothing. Right. Even like, and I, again, watching them all again, thinking like, they introduce Lando in Empire, and then Lando has a prominent role in Return of the Jedi. You know, like it's just, you don't introduce a character like that who gets a huge arc and then walk it all back if you're not actively trying to work back some of the things of the previous film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. So, What other threads do we want to talk about for this movie before we move on to something else?
Well,
Ray's parents, I guess.
Yes, I will say the one thing that Bob, you mentioned that it's overstuffed. My roommates and I were talking about it, and Rise of Skywalker. The real problem with it is that it's J.J. Abrams's episodes 8 and 9 crammed together. Like, yeah. it's if JJ had just gotten over himself and done episode 8, you know, and done episode 9, you can even see the pieces, right? You can see where the beats end in terms of like where episode 8 would end. Like, episode 8 would end on the ruins of the Death Star. And then episode 9 would take us out to Act Two again and into the Palpatine lair. Like, you could just see where the trappings would fall over.
Mm-hmm.
And he crams it all into this last movie, which leads to, I think, just a lot of quick and unfulfilling payoffs. Like, I don't know which death you're talking about, Bob, if it's the Chewie one in the beginning. Yeah. Which could have been an incredibly emotional beat, you know? But then within 5 minutes, they walk it back,
exactly.
Right? But imagine if that had happened.
For the
and
kids.
Then it, well, sure. But imagine if that had happened in episode 8. And then at the beginning of episode 9, it's revealed, no, we got him off. Like, oh, wow. Now it makes more sense. And he's back and blah, blah, blah. Like, if things had been stretched out the way that they could have been over in Act 2 and Act 3, like it's supposed to, then maybe it would have been different. But the big problem for me is watching Last Jedi again and watching the past die and all that stuff. And also the idea of you don't have to be anyone to be a hero. Like, that's something that Last Jedi really hit hard when I was watching it again. You know, this idea that...
Broom Boy.
And Broom Boy, like, is a beautiful moment. And it's a beautiful scene. And I'm like, wow, that's something. Watching it again before Rise of Skywalker and Rey being like, my parents were nobodies, whatever. There's something about that thematic message, right? This idea that to be a hero, you don't have to be bloodline one, or be kind of the hotshot, like, you know, savior either. You could just be part of the resistance and push back against evil, and you're good, right? You wear the ring. There's something so powerful about what Rian Johnson is doing with that. And then Rise of Skywalker is just like, JK, she's actually, there is blood, and the only way that you can be a hero is if you have the blood. They do tease the Force-sensitive stuff a little bit with Finn, but it never really amounts to anything.
He never gets to finish his sentence.
Right, it never really amounts to anything, and it just walks back a lot of stuff in a way that is so clearly walking back a lot of that stuff. So yeah, it's a bummer in that sense. The Palpatine stuff, it's funny because even before the movie and even Rey's parents being nobodies and blah, 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 I was still like, nah, she's probably a clone of Palpatine. Like even before the movie started, I was like, nah, that's probably what it is. But I didn't need him. I didn't need her to be the son, the daughter of the son of blah, 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 bloodline, nonsense, whatever. Right. I loved Zombie Palpatine. I thought Zombie Palpatine was gross and cool and attached to the machine, and I loved it. I thought that was so weird and fun. And the tankard of clone Snokes, loved it. That was so cool. Continuity wise, raises some issues, but it doesn't matter. It's a cool villain. You know, aesthetically, I really liked it. But I didn't need
Isn't he trying to have? He's behind having her killed.
Well, it's all
the other pictures.
It's all very confusing.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter though because it's still gruesome.
Yeah, but dude, he's been down there or wherever he is on that planet building the Final Order. All these trained people, all these ships, this stuff the whole time.
This is my question. This is my question for a franchise that has already introduced clones. I so wanted them in the stadium when they were all like. Sith, Palpatine. Yeah. Sith. I wanted them all to take their hoods back and just be Palpatines. Clones of Palpatines. That would have been amazing. But here's the thing, especially as people who, you know, we read comics, X-23 is all of our favorite character, you know, Laura. And I love that. Laura is just, she's a clone of Wolverine, but she's raised by this doctor who teaches her to be good. And I love that. There's a way for Rey to still have that Palpatine stuff and not be the daughter of some unknown character who isn't introduced until the last, like there's a way to do that and still have, you know, your Rey from nowhere raised by nobody and still have that and have her still reject that. Like there's no, you don't need that thread, that unnecessary thread that I think gets a lot of eye rolls from a lot of people.
Yeah. For me, if she wasn't going to be a Skywalker, when it wasn't going to be part of the twins that were from one of the extended universe novels that it's Han and Leia's daughter, so on and so forth. If you're not going to do that, the Nowhere is so special in its own way. It's so resonant of, just as you're saying, Joey, anyone can be a hero. And the whole Force-sensitive idea, that plays into that too. And abandoning that because people didn't like it, which is what it seems like has happened, it's sort of a shame. Are we going to see a Snyder cut?
No. Well, and the saddest part too is like the emotional reveal in Last Jedi of your parents were nobody with the soaring music and they just
that
killed all the Red Guards. But in this movie, Adam Driver's just like, you're a Palpatine. Like there's no music. It's just a flat line delivery. They're on the spaceship. Then she jumps out the spaceship and lands on the whatever.
It's that lack of majesty. Think of Vader telling Luke.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Oh my god.
Yeah, there's no reveal in Return of the Jedi when Darth Vader's like, just kidding, I wasn't your father. Like they don't walk that back. You know, they let the reveal in the second movie sit. That was a big moment for me. Not necessarily the Palpatine stuff. I love the Palpatine stuff. I thought he's a great villain to round out the series with. The Final Order stuff was great. All the ships showing up, really powerful moments. But all kind of, it's safe. It's checking the boxes. They're giving J.J. Abrams gives us the moments, but nothing pays off. Like it's like, oh yeah, you want this? Boom! Like all the shift, boom! You know, it's like, yeah, cool. I love the new characters.
Avengers, when the portals open and everyone shows up on your left, if people were crying up tearing up in the theater, here it's, oh, that's cool.
That's the Rise of Skywalker. Oh, that's cool. Like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. Kerry Russell's character, the Power Ranger
Zuri.
Power Ranger Zuri, Power Ranger Boba Fett. Loved it. Cool. I was like, that's
where's
cool.
Captain Phasma?
She dies in Last Jedi. She falls in the fire.
I know that, but Palpatine did too all those years ago. He had a really interesting character that went nowhere because they couldn't come up with a way.
You know, there's a lot of Daisy Ridley is working her ass off in this movie. Adam Driver, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, they're all having the time of their lives. It's fun. It's a cool movie, but again, and this is the problem with these two, is it's hard to think about the movie that ends a franchise as a movie in isolation. And it's hard to evaluate this film on just its own merits. You could judge it and say it's a little overstuffed. The performances are fun. There's some cool moments. But then if you think about it in the context of everything, right, and the resolution that it's ought to provide, I think it really misses the mark. And it's unfortunate that it misses the mark for reasons that I think aren't fair to it. It's a real bummer that I think they were pushed to walk back a lot of things and change a lot of things and cram a lot of things in that unfortunately are now the things that it's being criticized for. They should have just stuck to their guns. And I know that that's not what they do over at, you know, these big studios, but if they had just sat with it, you know, and
we'll never know if the real ending, whatever Rian Johnson might've.
Well, Rian Johnson was never going to do 9, you know, and not that Colin Trevorrow, I think would have done a bang up job either.
No.
But what boggles my mind about this whole ordeal, what boggles my mind is, like, did nobody like check? Was no one like, hey, Ryan, what are you doing on Last Jedi? Or like, what's the plan here? Like, did they not have an outline? Like, that's what blows my mind about. And then Steve, as you were saying, you're like reading these articles and you're reading about J.J. Abrams being like, yeah, the first one, we were super rushed. On this third one, we were totally like, we had to make this movie in like 4 months. Like, it's crazy. Like, that this was how they did it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just a bummer because Star Wars is, like you said, important to a lot of people. And, it was fine. That's all I can kind of come away with. It's fine. There's some cool new characters. Babu Freak, you know, like there's a lot of fun to be had. But if you're looking for a moral of the story, end with Last Jedi.
I think it's a little baffling that when you look at something like the Marvel Universe, and you know, there's a thing here and there, but all told, it's very well plotted and well orchestrated in terms of creating that connective tissue between the movies. And I'm just kind of shocked that Star Wars didn't receive the same level of care.
Yeah.
Considering how storied of a franchise it is. And they were just like, we're going to fly by the seat of our pants. And, you know, we're on a schedule. So we want to, you know, wrap the Skywalker stuff up so that we can start making other movies with other characters and just go and do our own thing. So let's just get it out there. And yeah, just not the most well orchestrated ending and or trilogy. It's really kind of mind blowing that they didn't sit down at the big table and be like, all right,
here's a plan.
How do we do this?
Yeah, it was beautiful. You
know, regardless of like who we bring in, they need to at least follow this plan to some degree.
Yeah. It's a beautifully shot film. J.J. Abrams. Yeah. I love the New York Times review that was like, J.J. Abrams is the best B+ player in movies right now. Like, he can make a good movie.
Yeah, but not Michael Bay.
It doesn't have that payoff, you know?
He did to Star Trek II in a certain way. And particularly, was it Into Darkness? Is that one where they have Khan? Where you've got moments you could make this work,
it's good. Like it's like okay, cool. Let's move on to the next thing. And this is the thing that I always find interesting. Like Rise of Skywalker, people talked about it for like 4 or 5 days, and now we're on to the next thing. Like the conversation's kind of,
It's fizzled out.
It's fizzled out, at least in my feed, I guess. And I think that's the nature of it, right? It's a good ride, and then it's like, all right, what do we got next? Whereas Force Awakens, Last Jedi, obviously the original Star Wars movies, even the prequels, like, I remember still reading Tumblr posts about the prequels 10 years later. Like, people were like, okay, here's the theories and here's the blah, blah, blah. Rise of Skywalker is just like, check, done, let's move on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like that, which is unfortunate, I think. Cool moments, love seeing Lando back. You know, what was he doing at Burning Man? I don't know, but it was fun.
Yeah. I'll be very curious to watch it again. I really did have a good time with it when I saw it in the theater, you know, warts and all, that whole thing. Mm. And yeah, you know, just at the end of the day, I'm okay with this stuff being over for now. Yeah. I think it would be a real good idea for them to maybe take a year or two off and really sit down and think about where they want to go, what characters they want to introduce, because you can't just keep doing the same thing, you know? It's worked for X amount of years. It's time for a change, I think. Okay.
Yeah. See it if you haven't. You have to. But,
it's fun. It's definitely fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Joey, do you want to give your thoughts on Mandalorian really quick?
So Mandalorian was the best Star Wars thing I've ever seen. and this is one of the things I loved about Rogue One. Not so much Solo, but I did enjoy about Solo and even the prequels too, which is this idea of like expanding out the world. Like one of the things I love about Mandalorian and Rogue One in particular is like, this is what life is like or was like under the Imperials, right? Like this under the Empire, this is what it's like. And it's giving us that boots on the ground. Here's what it is like, feeling out the universe. Loved it. Obviously Baby Yoda becomes a meme, but the final two episodes were awesome. And the thing I loved about it, the scene that's going around the internet is the opening scene, the cold open to the final episode with these two stormtroopers just being doofs. And what I love about it is the best Star Wars things are the ones that are conscious that it's a Star Wars thing. And there are some in-jokes in that scene alone that like perfectly encompass what modern contemporary Star Wars storytelling should be. In the universe, boots on the ground, conscious of some of the in-jokes. Like, these stormtroopers are trying to hit a rock with their blasters, and they obviously can't. And it's like, that's such a little quip, a little in-joke that is just so enjoyable. And it's a reminder of why you like this stuff in the first place. It's fun. But I really enjoyed it. Mandalorian is really great. It's to be honest, it's Disney Plus is worth the price of admission for Mandalorian alone. And we'll be getting some more next fall, which is very, 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 very exciting. Same thing with all Star Wars stuff. The acting is kind of like, eh. But it's the universe is so good, and it's beautiful, and the music's fun, and the speeders are like, and it's pew, pew, pew. You're just watching it, and you're having a hell of a good time. So I love The Mandalorian, and I was excited to get those episodes the same week that Rise of Skywalker came out, because I was like, oh, yeah, this is why I love it.
Yeah. We finished The Mandalorian, I think, last night. And yeah, very highly enjoyable. Lots of fun. And, you know, introducing new characters. Really enjoyed Gina Carano's Cara Dune. I thought she was a lot of fun. I loved Nick Nolte's dude.
Queel.
Wow. I have spoken. I can't remember his name.
Queel.
He was great. Lots of great moments, but if anything, what that series had given us, and there, Bryce Dallas Howard directed an episode.
Deborah Chow.
Taika Waititi did the last one that you're talking about with the two stormtroopers. He did the finale, but Deborah Chow.
Oh, episode three
coming out. Yeah, dude, like she did, I think, three episodes in the series, and in my opinion, those were the best, including the one from Taika Waititi. But like, She's going to be heading up the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. I think she's doing the whole thing.
Hell yes.
And now after seeing her episodes for The Mandalorian, I had zero interest in the Obi-Wan show. Now I'm actually really pumped for it.
Well,
and go ahead.
Well, I don't want to make this a thing, but like, Mandalorian ruled because different people were telling Star Wars stories. Like, that's that's what's so cool about Star Wars and why so many people love it. Like, it is a universe and a franchise that speaks to all different kinds of people. And Mandalorian finally gave those different kinds of people, women and people of color, the opportunity to tell those stories literally from behind the chair in live action. And they're awesome. So it's just a different kind of investment and a different kind of a view of the world. Deborah Chow's, was that the episode where Mando talks with the sand people? Was that the Tatooine episode?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was like, oh my God. Oh yes. Like, the Tusken Raiders are just like normal people who have these like Imperial people coming in and treating them like foreign, like savages. So of course we're going to view them as such until you realize like, no, they're just people. And that idea of like perspective and alternate perspectives and resistant readings, like, you only get that when you introduce different voices to the room. And Mandalorian works partly because of that.
Right on. Bob, you haven't had the opportunity to check out Mandalorian, have you?
No, sir.
Okay. It's very good. It's very, very, very good. I was excited that they decided to confirm the news that there's going to be a season two in the fall. It's a pretty relatively quick turnaround. I would imagine that they just contracted everybody for further stuff, you know, seeing if the series did well. Mm. And I believe it's one of the biggest originals on Disney Plus so far. They don't have a whole lot, but
High School Musical, the musical.
Yeah.
What did you think about streaming it week to week instead of binging it?
I thought it was really cool. I thought it was a smart way to go because, you know, my problem with the streaming and the binge watching, because, I mean, Lord knows we've done that a lot in the past couple of years. Bronwyn and I are like, once a show gets its hooks into us, we usually just gun the whole thing in about a day and a half. But the problem with that is that it leaves very little time for the series to really resonate with you. And just me and the way that my mind works and how forgetful I am for details about things. When I binge something, it's very hard for me, like later in the year, to remember what it is that I'd even watched. Mm-hmm. And for something like The Mandalorian, portioning it out every week, it kept The Mandalorian in the conversation for, you know, eight or nine weeks, however long this was coming out. And so, like, Baby Yoda got to have, you know, its best life online, becoming this, you know, soup sipping meme and all the little things that character does. And now it's a beloved character that people are dying that they didn't get Baby Yoda toys for Christmas. And so they're forced to make their own. You know, you see people crocheting them, making them out of clay. And it's awesome because it gets people involved in the show in other ways. And just as like a talking piece, like gathering around the campfire to talk about Mandalorian every week, every Friday, or that one Wednesday that they dropped that episode early because of Rise of Skywalker, because they wanted you to know that you could do other things with the Force. I really enjoyed it because it was, you know, every Friday came around, Bronwyn would come home from work and we're like, oh, when we make dinner, what do you want to watch? Like, oh, there's another episode of The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
We're watching The Witcher right now. And that's, again, a bingeable thing. And I feel like we'll be done with it in about 2 days. And then 3 weeks from now, I'll just be moving on to the other thing and I'll forget all about it until season two comes out.
And we've done a lot of binging like for the show because we've had to like talk about Jessica Jones next week, you know, and have to watch the whole thing. And it's always interesting to think like, then we never talked about Jessica Jones again. Whereas Mandalorian, we've talked about a couple of times already. And it, like you said, it keeps it in the conversation. So I'll be interested to see if like this streaming model takes over. Cause I think it was incredibly successful for Disney and Star Wars.
Yeah. I think it definitely gave more people a chance to get involved. It got the word out about the show longer, you know, like if a show comes out on Friday, it drops Friday morning, everybody binges it that weekend, and by the next week, something's already come out. Like, the attention span of people nowadays that have all these streaming services is very limited. And unless your show really makes an impact and people continue to talk about it, like something like Umbrella Academy or Fleabag, things like that, it just doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't always hold water. But I think the idea of them releasing it weekly was a smart move, and I would not be surprised if they use that model going forward, because they get more talk out about it, more money out of it when they do finally release products for it. People are going to go nuts. So it was a smart move. Let's see. Let's move on super quick. We do got to get to some books at some point. All right. I'll just say a quick word. I got Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order for Christmas from my sister-in-law. It was a big surprise. And so I got this right after we saw The Rise of Skywalker. She totally capitalized on my Star Wars high of the evening and was like, here, take this. And I opened it, and I started playing it yesterday, and it's really awesome. It takes place after episode 3, and so it involves this character named Cal, who looks an awful lot like, what was his name, Cameron something, the kid that played Jerome in Gotham, the Joker character.
Oh, Monahan, Cameron Monahan?
Yeah. He was also on Shameless, that guy. So you basically, I don't know if it is him, but it certainly looks like him, and it sounds like him. You are a young Jedi, and you're kind of slumming it as a scrapper. And word gets out that there is a Jedi that has used his force powers. You use it to save your friend, blah, blah, blah. And so now they're looking for you, and they're looking to eradicate the Jedi because they're afraid that there's going to be a new uprising of them. And basically it comes around to you hooking up with this small resistance squad. And you find out that there is a map or a list that will give you the names of all of these Jedi that exist throughout the galaxy. And you're basically heralding this new order of Jedi in the universe, or at least you're trying to. The game is super polished in terms of presentation. It's a little buggy here and there, but in my experience, and I've only played the game for about 3 hours, some of the bugs have been really fun. Like, you can run on walls in this in certain areas, and I actually ran off of a wall, and I jumped. And when you jump, the character kind of tucks his legs beneath him when he jumps up onto a ledge or something. And so he tucked his legs up underneath him, and they just stayed there. And I continued to just cruise onto the platform like I was driving a car or a speeder, and it was hilarious. You get to use your force powers. The lightsaber stuff is really cool. And it's not easy. It is not an easy game. It is kind of like Dark Souls meets Uncharted meets Star Wars. And lots of combat, lots of different button combinations, whether you hold or you slash. There's a couple of really cool moves. There's a lightsaber finishers that are really neat. When you go after the creatures that are on the planets with the lightsaber and you cauterize them, you can actually see like the cauterization cutting them in half and them like sizzling up. It's really, really cool. Anyway, if you were thinking about getting it, I recommend it. If you're kind of riding the Star Wars right now, it'll scratch that itch for you real nice. I'm having a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to playing more of it later today. And when I'm not playing the new Call of Duty, because that's so good. Books. Let's go through a couple of books. Bob.
Sure.
What have you been reading since we took our little vacation?
Some really interesting endings all seemed to come at once. Some were good. Some were sad. One was, Batman 85. That's Tom King, Mikhail Yanin. Basically, we spent 35 issues to get right back to where we were at number 49. Just didn't land for me at all, which is really sad, and there's no way to know where we're going to go moving forward. So in that time, it's either this sort of Tom King repudiating his own initial take on where he started with Batman. So it's either character growth or wool gathering, you know, take your pick. Future Foundation 5, really a shame because it was my favorite issue so far. And a lot of things put into place that would have been lovely to see moving forward. So, Jeremy, we love what you did. We wish there could be more. So there was that. King Thor, Jason Aaron, Issa Rubik, and basically the Asgardian All-Stars really just absolutely epic myth-making. Lovely that his run could end in this sort of way.
Nice.
Invaders 12, Chip Zdarsky, Carlos Magno, Butch Geis. Wow. Simply
so
an amazing.
It was good. It was successful.
Well, Invaders? Invaders? Yeah. Yeah. You need the full complement of Invaders, basically, to get through the plot that he's been running all through here. Brings them back as major players in terms of where they are in the Marvel history. And to me, you're restoring Prince Namor, the original anti-hero, to sort of where he was. And now there's going to be a lot of stuff moving forward with him. So that was cool. Mm-hmm. Gwenpool Strikes Back, number 5. Mm-hmm. Joey, this is now an important X book.
Get out of here.
Yep. It is even more meta than usual, as Gwen's deep dive into her own continuity and the white spaces in between brings her into that other franchise's sphere of influence, is all I'm going to say.
Interesting.
You don't know what exactly it's all going to mean, but because who knows, anyone will pick that thread up, but Leah Williams did a really nice job with that. I put David Baldion on art. Two really special finales. Doomsday Clock, number 12.
Oh.
Jeff Johns, Gary Frank. Look, I'll talk more about this in a couple of weeks. But boy, despite all the backstage shenanigans, this really, really finished up this series beautifully. You restore Superman to the central figure in the DC universe. He restarts the multiverse in a really elegant way, very satisfying to someone who's been reading all these stories all this year. And I don't know if any of this is going to matter in the Snyderverse version of the DC printed universe, but it's a shame.
It will, because they confirm 5G.
They do that. and throw into the mix what could be a intercompany crossover.
Yeah.
Even if it's only in his head. I love the heck out of it. Did you get to read?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Doomsday Clock 12 was amazing. I reread all of it again for the show, but also I needed to know how it ended 3 years later. I loved it. I've been on a Superman kick for the last few months. And between that, Superman Smashes the Clan.
Oh, I love the second issue of that.
You know, Event Leviathan, all that stuff. Superman is such a wonderful, amazing character. And Doomsday Clock, starting in the Watchmen universe, and it was something that like was surprising for all of us that were reading it. Like, oh, it's very brutalist, like, you know, Watchmen-esque kind of storytelling. But then as the series goes on and it interrogates who Batman is and who Superman is and the whole Superman theory and all that, I was just like, this book is on another level. And it ends with such optimism and hope. Mm-hmm. That I loved it. I was like, you know what? Forget it. Give me this movie. Like you want to? You're obsessed with Watchmen, and you think you're convinced Superman can only be, you know, dark and brooding. Give us Doomsday Clock the film. It'd be a ball. It'd be wild. Metaverse. Oh my god. I'd be like, this is crazy. Oh, I loved it. I loved Doomsday Clock 12. It was great.
Steve, you're not caught up yet.
For Doomsday Clock, no. I wanted to make time to go not read the whole thing over again, but maybe just from like the middle on, just to get the momentum to lead up. Because I feel like if I read 12 by itself at this point, it won't land for me the way that it needs to.
You have a good plan. The second half of it, if you have the first half still in your head, the setup to where we get the ball rolling downhill, really pretty amazing.
Yeah, I really enjoyed my. I said this on the best of shows. I really enjoyed my reread, I guess, of the series. But it didn't pick up for me until about issues 4 or 5 was when I really settled into the groove and was kind of blown away by the plotting of that series and how hugely the villain comes into play and all the different strings being pulled.
Oh my God! You just wait.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's honestly, like, of all the things that I like about that series, it's the Ozymandias stuff that is impressing me the most, and the Superman stuff as well. But genuinely just sitting there reading and then, like, audibly going, like, holy crap, like, that's clever, that's cool, and just really kind of being, like, I don't know what the word for it is. I don't know. It's good. I like it. I will definitely catch up. It's beautiful that we have two more weeks to catch up with these things.
Yeah.
Because I might not have been able to fit some of it in if we didn't. So
I have one more finale.
Yeah.
It's Harlene, Stepanchich, which simply put, this is an amazing bit of craftsmanship, artistry. You know, for me, it may be the first time I've read Harley Quinn that she really resonated as a fully formed human being.
Mm-hmm.
He manages to overwrite some of the more problematic parts that we've seen over the years and still puts her on that same very dark path. But now we've shown how, as he puts it, a very smart person can do very dumb things when manipulated by someone who is so perfect at it.
Right.
Just stunning.
Very cool. Those all your books for right now?
Yep.
Okay. Joey.
Yeah, I've been mostly reading stuff for the best of, so I don't want to talk too much about them. I will say too, I don't know if we got a chance to talk about the Watchmen television show finale, which happened.
Oh yeah,
that was amazing. Similarly to what I love about DC and about Watchmen, even as a franchise, Watchmen is there is this notion of hope and potential in the DC universe and in the Watchmen universe that people just ignore. it's not dark and brooding. Like, I don't get why people think that that's what makes those universes so great. But the way that the Watchmen series ended was just absolutely brilliant. That was the best thing on the TV this year. It was just so good.
I agree.
The thing, I've been reading a lot for the show, like I said, but the thing that really stuck out to me, and I'm glad we got onto the list, was Murder Falcon.
Yeah, you read it.
Loved Murder Falcon. It was stupendous, powerful. I cried at the end. It's just an amazing, amazing piece that is just so balls to the wall and so emotionally, you know, resonant. It's really great. Little Bird was weird. I liked it. It was interesting. That was a weird one for me. What else did I read? I read Vita's James Bond.
So did I.
Which was a lot of fun. Did not go where I thought it was going to go, but I still had a lot of fun with it. I had to flip back and see if some of the secrets were there, and they were. And it was good plotting. Good plotting. Mm-hmm. What else have I been reading? Caught up on all the X-Men stuff. That's been, as we've been discussing, it's just been a lot of fun reading books like Excalibur and Marauders and X-Force and everything. It's been a very strong end to a very strong year in comics. In terms of the finales, yes, but in terms of some of the series that we've just continued to really love and enjoy as well. I'm excited to see how we vote, and I'm excited to see where we go in 2020. There's been some big announcements already and some books coming that I'm excited for. But yeah, no, I don't want to spoil any of my talk for the best of.
I've got a very big vote in my pocket for our overall comics. I'm trying to really orient myself to think about some of the stuff that we've nominated as a whole, and not just like, we have some things in that category that have been around for a while, and I'm really trying to take in the entirety of those things before I put my votes in. This is the hardest year we've ever had. Those lists that we've created are nasty, and it's gonna be, there's not a single book that deserves to be at the bottom of any of those lists.
Right.
So, super duper good. Bob, were you going to say anything?
Nope, except to say that we nominated an amazing bunch of very emotional books that require Kleenex.
Yeah.
There's some really powerful stuff across every sort of response you can imagine. There's lots of laugh out loud and there's lots of action, but there's just a ton of very personal stories being told by some of these creators.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these creators who we've been following for a while, which I think is also making this a really difficult year. You know, we like reading Pretty Deadly the Rat and thinking about like how we've just been following Kelly Sue DeConnick for like 5 years, you know, like there's something cumulative and summative about that whole thing. Next on my list actually to get through is the Aquaman run. So I'm really excited to jump into that.
Have you read Coda yet?
Coda is on my iPad. Aquaman, I have to get.
Love yeah, Coda, by the way.
Oh, Coda.
Coda. I've read the first volume of Coda, and I really, totally. But Cy-Spyr is the same thing. Like, I've been following Cy-Spyr for years, and I'm excited to read this. Again, it's just watching them get better and better and better, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's why I finally really, you know, pushed for Criminal this year, too, because, like, there's nothing better in noir than that. And it's been going for 10 years, if not more. So just to think about, like you said, the best, you know, to really think about the best. It's wild. Also love Bad Reception, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That book was crazy.
Yeah, it's that first episode, that first issue is really, really beefy. But it frames that entire series quite well and gives you a real taste of what you're in for. Oh. And it just keeps getting better.
Wait, I want to take everything back. The one issue that I read was Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man.
Oh.
The single issue. And I knew when you were talking about it, I was like, I know what this book is going to be about. And then I read it and then I was crying and then I was like, damn you, Steve. Damn you. I knew it. I was like, I know what this is going to be. And I was turning the pages and I was like, uh-oh, it's coming. It's coming. Boom. And then I read Murder Falcon right after that. And I was like, God damn it, Steve. I was like, God damn it.
I won't talk about it here because I don't want to spoil it. But there's one panel. There's a moment in that Spider-Man issue that every time I read it and I look at the exchange between two characters and it just stabs me right in my heart.
Ugh.
And that was a standout issue.
I love comics.
I'll go through my list real quick. So a lot of websites are obviously starting to post their end of the year. And all throughout 2019, I kept on seeing people talking about the Immortal Hulk. It was on everybody's list as far as like Marvel superhero books. And it was showing up on a couple of other lists like near the top. And I'm like, at some point I'm going to go and check this out because I've never really invested myself in a Hulk series and I kind of want to know what everybody's so excited about. And then of course, Comixology started doing their holiday sales and whatever. And all the trades for Immortal Hulk up until this point were $2.99. And the first trade had the first 10 issues in it. So I was like, oh, I'll go and check that out. And so what you have for the Immortal Hulk is kind of following up on when Bruce Banner was taken out by Hawkeye. I can't even remember what event that was, but
it was Hawkeye Civil War II.
Yeah, okay, there you go. One of those,
I think.
And so this is picking up on that, and I won't go too much into like plot details and whatnot, but this is very much a body horror Hulk book, which is real, real weird. They do some stuff with the Absorbing Man, Crusher Creel, in this series that is just wild. And this idea that Bruce Banner lives during the day, but the Hulk comes out at night kind of thing, and how you can kill Bruce Banner, but you can't kill the Hulk, and the Hulk will always resurrect Bruce Banner, and what that does to him emotionally and everything. And it's interesting. I don't know that it would have ended up on any of my lists just yet, but I'm having fun reading it. I read the first 10 issues and I have volumes 2 and 3 waiting in the wings. Those were also super cheap, so I picked those up. But cool. I could definitely see why people were chatting about it online. Let's see what else. I checked out The Skull Digger number 1, which is from Jeff Lemire. And this actually, I didn't even know when I picked it up and didn't even bother to look at the cover, but this is actually hails from the Black Hammer universe. It's a spinoff from that. And it's quite cool. It's kind of this story about a young kid who his parents are killed. It's very, very Bruce Wayne in the beginning. His parents are killed. And this superhero, this vigilante guy named Skull Digger shows up, takes the guy out that killed the kid's parents, and he's like, you know, look away, kid, you don't want to see this. And the kid's just kind of standing there and he's like just staring so intently at this guy about to get it. And Skull Digger sees something in him and basically takes him under his wing. And it looks like it's going to be a pretty gnarly story. It's Jeff Lemire, so I have no doubt. A pretty strong debut for that. James Bond, number one, I read as well. I won't spoil anything, but I was really kind of blown back by how much James Bond is not in that book. And I thought that was an extremely bold choice for a first issue of a James Bond. But Vita, I'm in. I'm down with it. I really enjoyed kind of what they're setting up there.
That's a very Ian Fleming thing to do, by the way. The novel, The Spy Who Loved Me,
yeah,
is told by the person who's in love with James Bond, who is just the agent who then shows up eventually.
There's
very little to do with the movie, but so she's, you know, Vita is going right back into Ian Fleming's novels to use that little trick.
Cool. I also read Family Tree, number two. That's another Lemire and Hester joint. It was really just more of giving you the background as to what the family tree, like inherited virus is, if you will, and how it's affected different people in the family. You learn a lot about the grandfather who shows up at the end of the first issue. And there's some heartstrings being tugged in that issue. It was quite sad. Other thing that I from Boom Studios was Folklords number two. Really, really loved that first issue. This is from Matt Kent and Matt Smith. And it is really, really weird to read a Matt Kent story that is not also illustrated by him. It gives the book this entirely different feel. Lots of whimsy. Again, just a second issue kind of setting up more of the journey and who's going to be involved in this adventure that they're going on, and more glimpses of what's to come in terms of making it to where the Folklords are and what they represent and things like that. That continues to be a lot of fun. In terms of like rereads or first reads for the award stuff, I read The Dreaming, numbers 1-7. That's the first trade. I reread Coda volumes 1 and 2, and then I hadn't read 3 before the awards, and now I have. And we'll talk a lot more about that book when we get to our award show. I read Murder Falcon 1-8 last night, just to remind myself of how amazing and devastating that book is. I love all the different things that that does. I love the celebration of music in that series and music as a form of therapy, which is very much how I've connected with music throughout the years. So that series speaks to me in a very big and personal way. I reread Laura Dean Keeps Breaking Up With Me and just reaffirmed my enjoyment of that book. Kind of knowing what was coming, I found myself less frustrated with the main character. The book is still a little maddening in terms of the decisions being made. But again, when we talked about it a couple months ago, another book that I can really identify with and kind of makes you, at least made me look back on some of my past relationships and maybe what went wrong or how I kept falling for X, Y, and Z because I just wanted to be loved. And so it's a deep book. It brings a lot of things to the surface. Another thing I got to read, Giraffes on Horseback Salad.
Whoa.
So much fun.
Oh, so lovely.
So much fun. I loved the comic artwork, positively mesmerizing, really, really fun story. Bob, I got to say, we've done so many podcasts together, but getting another look at the Marx Brothers and their method of humor and kind of what they do. So many of your jokes from throughout the years, I can hear coming from the Marx Brothers.
I'm a Marxist.
My God. They influenced your sense of humor. And in a very good and entertaining way. I just, the whole time that I was reading that book, I was like, oh my God, Bob says stuff like this all the time. This is amazing. Like even when we were listening to the podcast on the way home, I was pointing out things. I was like, right there. I'm like, that's a Marx Brothers joke. So yeah, just really, really, really fascinating. There's about 45 pages or so of text of the background of how this book came to be and the journey of putting it together. And as much as I enjoyed the comic portion of it and, you know, seeing the screenplay come to life that way, the history of how the book was made was fascinating. And I really, really dug that a lot. Salvador Dali and the Marx Brothers just sound like they were a wild time. And I really, really ended up enjoying that book a lot. I was excited to read it, and it did not disappoint. And the last thing that I read was Are You Listening? By Tilly Walden. Yeah, let me tell you something. I'm not going to go too much into it because we will definitely talk about this book when we come back for our awards. But I want to thank you, Joey, for including this on your list and bringing it up, because I had considered it for mine, but I felt like I'd already had so many things that not everything was going to make the list. And I'm just so grateful that you brought this to the table and that I was meant to do a reread of this, because as much as I enjoyed it on a first read, it really hit me on the second. And I got so much more out of it on a second read.
It's a trip, absolutely, man.
Yeah, it really is. And I don't know that I appreciated the amount of metaphor that is going on in that book and how so many different elements are tied to one another and represent the pain of these two women that are on this road trip, and how even like down to the cat and the mission of trying to bring her home.
Ugh.
And everything. Oh, it's such a powerful book. It's such a powerful book. And I highly recommend reading it and then maybe stepping away from it for a little bit and going back to read it again, because it really landed for me differently the second time. As much as I enjoyed it on the first round, that second one just bowled me over with how masterfully crafted that story is. And it's just layers upon layers upon layers of emotion, and just rocked my world. Love that book so much. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure that I've read some other things. I probably didn't include some on this list, but that's pretty much the bulk of it. And yeah, like I said, say it every year. You know, this is my favorite time of year when we start reading all of the really, really amazing things that we've read throughout the year. And I know we've received some tweets about people being upset that we didn't include certain series or certain books. And I'll just reiterate that we can only nominate the things that we've read. We are just four people this year doing these awards. And, you know, we pay for the vast majority of our own books. We do get a couple of review copies, but not for most publishers. And share your thoughts with us if you think that something should have been nominated, and, bring it to our attention, and we'll try to get to some of that stuff. That's part of why I picked up The Immortal Hulk, because so many people were talking about it and wanted to check it out. And so we'll be back in not next episode, but the episode after that, we will discuss and vote and crown all of our winners. In the meantime, you can go to talkingcomicbooks.com, where we have all the voting polls set up. Some of our creators and books have well over 100 votes and wow, into the 200s, and it's awesome. Yeah, it's really cool. We'll try to share that a few more times throughout the next 2 weeks to get people to vote in those categories and tell us what you thought. And but overall, it's been a really, really successful year. A lot of the creators have been sharing the show. We got a lot of new followers, probably a couple of new listeners. And if this is your first show after the award stuff that you've been listening to, and you kind of came to the show after that, we have, you know, lots of creators coming on in the new year, and maybe even some grand returns of co-hosts. We're trying to feel that out now. And yeah, you know, going on year 8, I believe.
Yeah,
for that. this little enterprise. So yeah, it's fun. We have a good time. Is that it?
That's it.
I think that's it. Okay. Does anybody have any Wait, what books are we looking forward to this week? Did anybody do that?
Yep. I got a couple.
Bob, what are you picking up?
Oh, it's Lois Lane number 7. Mm-hmm. We've got the finale of Web of the Black Widow, which has been underwhelming, but I pre-ordered it, so I might as well pick it up. And I'm intrigued to look at the young adult Diana, Princess of the Amazon by Sharon and Dean Hale and Victoria Ying, I believe is the artist. Ooh. On that. Which cool. looks very interesting. The Hales did the prose novels of Squirrel Girl, among other things. So this looks to be a lot of fun. It's 11-year-old Diana.
Oh, wow.
Realizing she's on an island and she's the only child in this place of all these powerful women and how she reacts and does some stuff.
All right. I'm picking up Lois Lane number 7. Going to check out Matthew Rosenberg's Hawkeye Freefall number 1. Coming out this week. Marauders number 5. Thor number 1. Donny Cates comes out. Want to see what he's going to do with that. And X-Men number 4 is my other book. Kind of a light week after that monster on the 18th of December. Oh, man. I didn't spend as much as I thought I was going to, but woof. I had a lot of books that week. You were not kidding, Bob.
Write them all down and you look and say, wow, there's a whole bunch of money spent. Well spent, however.
A trip to the food store.
Yep.
Yeah.
Joey, do you have any books that you're
pretty much already all said? I'll just add Ruby Falls number 4 of 4 to it.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So I think we're done here. That's all we got. We'll come back. We're gonna finalize our plan for next week. We'll probably do some geek trivia. Of course, we'll have more books to talk about and whatever. But yeah, and then after that, we'll come back for the awards, and then we'll start doing a whole other year of this podcast.
Oh baby.
Oh yeah. Okay, so we've reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. As always, you can send us your comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are also on Twitter @TalkingComics. Don't forget to check out talkingcomicbooks.com for reviews from our fantastic contributors, including some year-end lists. And don't forget to check out Talking Valiant, D&D Adventure, and of course, the Ladies of Valhalla podcasts. Bob, where can our listeners find you?
Old-fashioned email, bobreyer@talkingcomicbooks.com.
Joey?
@JoeyBurchino.
Yeah. Sarah is @GeekCountryLady on Twitter and Instagram. And Jessica is @Jarska for all the things. And Bronwyn is @ShinyBabyB. I am @Dead_Anchoress on Twitter and Instagram. So for Bob.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Joey.
Hep, hep. New Year.
I've been Steve Say. Thank you so much for listening. Happy New Year, everybody. Make 2020 count in the best of ways. Be excellent to each other. And until next time on the Talking Comics podcast, to be continued. I kind of miss having the intro music get me pumped.
Do you mean like pre-playing?
Yeah. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
I mean, you could play it for yourself.
While you all sit there in silence? I don't think so.
Yeah.
We'll scat.
All right. We got an hour.
Beep-bop-boop-ba-doop-bop.
We got an hour.
Beep-bop-boop-ba-doop-bop.
All right, here we go. Ready? Ugh.